Baxter with Jakob Gregor. He is a professor at Catholic University of America, is at the Marathon Initiative and at the Hoover Institution, writing most recently about the European challenges of the Ukraine conflict. There are American challenges as well, but we divide the two transnational organizations, the EU 27 states and NATO larger, because it includes new additions from the Balkans and from Eastern Europe. Professor, is Europe divided in a fashion that is important to this debate? The Eastern flank, so-called, the Baltic states, Poland, down to Romania, see the threat and want to respond presently. And the Western states, that would include the best of the economies of the Western states, I'm thinking of NATO, are less engaged. Is that a part of the problem, Professor?
Yes, but I would say, you know, it's not, so within NATO, there are divisions themselves, namely between, as you call them, Eastern flanks, which goes now goes from, you know, Nordic states, Finland, and others down through essentially the Black Sea, through the Baltic republics, Poland, and down to Romania. And those are quite, those states are quite aware and alert to the Russian menace that has been building up over the past two decades. The Western European states, and particularly Germany and Italy, and to a certain degree France and UK is a little bit of a different case, are less worried. It's just simple geography. Their assessment of the threat that they face is different. Russia is simply not their neighbor directly, and they think that they can find some sort of modus vivendi with Moscow. Moreover, particularly for the southern, the Mediterranean state, in particular Italy, the main security problem is not Russia, it's the Mediterranean Sea and the instability that is in that region with all the migration flows that come from North Africa and of mostly men that come from Sub-Saharan Africa and Asia and the migrant problem. So it's some simply natural outcome of the geographic differences that are characterized, that are characteristic of the European continent, that make them think that they have different threats. Now, it's and you can sort of witness that in the defense spending. Most of the Western European states spend less in percentage of their GDP than the Eastern European or Central European state, the Eastern flank. Poland spends close to 4%, I think it's 3.9% of its GDP on defense. Germany, I think, is under 2%, it's about 1.9% recently. And Italy is also under 2%, and a lot of their expenses actually go to personnel outlays rather than weapons and research and development. So there is a definitely a division. This translates into a different approach towards Russia, and that's been visible over the past two decades, and is certainly visible now, I think.
NATO, then, it's underway with a big exercise, largest since the end of the Cold War, we're told. 90,000 troops, lots of warplanes, lots of warships, and Russia continues to find a way to mention nuclear weapons. Hence this headline in London this morning. Is that something that has spurred NATO to more complete presence and to prepare for the armaments that are necessary in the event of a conflict with Russia? Or is NATO again settling back and waiting for the U.S. to get out front?
No, I think there certainly has been some positive developments in the past couple of years in that more states within NATO, more European states within NATO, have increased their defense spending. The promise that goes back to a pledge of years ago of spending 2% of their GDP, has not been really met by most states until the last couple of years. So it's a combination, I think, of their preoccupation with President Trump then, and perhaps with him returning to the White House, and 2014, and especially the last 2 years. The war of aggression that Russia has conducted on Ukraine. So there are some positive developments. I think the problem is that the biggest economies, in particular Germany, have not really increase substantially their defense spending. So if Estonia meets 2% and spends a little bit more than 2% of its defense, well, in absolute numbers, that's a tiny number in comparison to what a 2% or 2.5% of GDP could be if Germany spent it. So, again, in terms of the absolute numbers, I think it's the hope is that at some point the biggest economies in Europe, Germany, Italy, UK, and France, would spend considerably more on defense and on the right. Right things in defense, less on just personnel and more on simple ammunition, tanks, artillery tubes, which they really don't have. The numbers of weapons or platforms that some of these European states have available is quite astoundingly low. From the top of my head, I think the UK has about 40 or so tanks that they can deploy at a moment's notice.
Yes, it's something like that. And I believe there's been an adjustment saying you need to spend 80% of your allotment on procurement, right, not on pensions and personnel matters. I don't think that I have a measure of whether that is accurately being presented, but from what we have of what you just said of the UK and Germany, they're not procuring anywhere close to 2% of their GDP.
Mm-mm, no. You know, the Germans have given some of their tanks to Ukraine.
Yes.
And they wanted to replace them, but then they placed an order, and they'll get about 20 or so, under 20 new tanks, but in 2 years or a year and a half. Russia is producing about that amount pretty much every month.
We have a minute, Professor, so I want to understand now your measure of Europe. Is it responding, or is it that metaphor that is so attractive when somebody's asleep, Rip Van Winkle? Is it waking up, Professor? We have 30 seconds.
In some cases, it is, but I think it's not enough. It's far from being enough, in particular when they say that this is an existential threat they're facing. If it's true, they're not waking up. They're just hoping that this existential threat somehow will go away. Poland, the Baltic states, maybe. Finland, yes. Germany, Italy, France, the UK are not.
Professor Jakob Gregel of the Catholic University of America and the Marathon Initiative and at the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at the Wall Street Journal. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.